just in an effort to get everyone moved up front.
Control us. And then get activated.
Control minus.
Okay. So I got stuck in a wee bit of traffic on the way here, which is a really, really good opportunity to practice horn teaching. So,
Sashi Buki Rishin Eto Tam Rira Vinci Hinde Himadi Sange Shindu Nite Ruagi Drokun Nanda Shima Chuparsho Iram Guru Ratnam Andalakam Chiram Soki Chognam Lam Jamsu Bayu Dakni Kasuchi Daki Chinyan Kipe Sunam Ki Dola Venture Sange Chupasho
Sange
Chiram Soki Chognam Lam Jamsu Bayu Dakni Kasuchi Daki Chinyan Gipe Sunam Ki Dola Penchir Sange Drupa Sho
Sange
Chiram Soki Choknam La Jantu Varyu Daki Kapsu Chi Daki Chinyan Gipe Sunam Ki Dola Penchir Sange Drupa Sho.
Okay, let's start with a meditation. Hi, come on in. Welcome. Oh, wonderful, welcome.
Pardon?
I said welcome, that's wonderful. Hi. I think Laura's going to need an extra chair. So I get to try out this new platform so that like when Geshe Tsultan comes back, he'll have some confidence that it doesn't fall over, right? So it's great because I really love it. I can see all of you so much better now. So I hope it's works for you as well. Yeah. So we're going to start with a meditation, and what we're going to do is just jump right into a traditional loving kindness meditation. What that means is I'm just going to try the next slide. Okay, I thought I had it up there as a meditation. Maybe you can find it. And so that I thought I would put it up there just so that you can see. All right, no, it was actually the May I Be Happy. There we go.
There.
Okay. So this is the traditional wording of the Metta meditation. And as I mentioned, we start with ourselves and then traditionally go on with somebody who is a neutral person, and then someone who's you really have a warm feeling towards, and then a neutral person, and then someone that you're having difficulty with in your life, okay? So what we're gonna do today is just spend today on ourselves. How often do we do that? So I thought we'll just do, start with the traditional metta meditation of loving kindness for ourselves. So settle in, find just a comfortable posture. The important thing is that your spine is straight, that you feel grounded and connected with the earth. I found that when I sit in a chair, it actually helps me if I lift either my heels or my whole feet off the ground and then place them on the ground again. And that just helps really intentionally reconnect me with the grounding of the Mother Earth. And then with the willingness to let go of everything that your mind may be thinking about that's left over from the day or anticipating what you're going to do after the class is over. Bring your full attention to feel that connection with the ground through your sit bones contacting your seat, through your knees, through your feet, wherever it is that you feel that connection of solidity. And what you're paying attention to is the felt, tactile, physical sensation. That's something we can rush through our day without attending to. So notice what arises when you just bring your full awareness to the felt, tactile, physical sensations where your sit bones contact the seat. Where your feet or knees contact the cushion or the floor. Now allow your awareness to shift to your breath. You don't need to change anything. You don't need to make it longer or shorter. Just become aware of how it feels to have the tide of the breath flow in and out. Just as we don't try to control the tide of the ocean as it washes out and in on the shore, it's that same sense of being very present, experiencing it. No control. Begin to recite inwardly the traditional phrases directed towards our own well-being. We begin with ourselves because once we are filled with loving kindness for ourselves, it will begin to naturally radiate out towards all living beings. And at the moment, no worries. If you struggle with what the meaning is, or you don't feel it, or things arise, Just repeat the phrases, saying each slowly, letting the feelings permeate whatever arises your body and mind. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be free from all suffering. May I be awake to my life. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be free from all suffering. May I be awake to my life. Noticing what arises, noticing how your heart space feels. See if you can begin to allow the meaning and the feeling of the phrase to sink towards the warmth of your heart. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be free from all suffering. May I be awake to my life. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be free from all suffering. May I be awake to my life. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be free from all suffering. May I be awake to my life. May I be happy. safe. May I be free from all suffering. May I be awake to my life. Now releasing the phrase, releasing the words. Letting your awareness rest for a moment in simplicity and stillness. Just aware of what's arising in your body and mind. Aware of the emotions, images, thoughts, feelings. Noting them without being swept away by them. And bringing your awareness again back to the felt, physical, tactile sensations where your body contacts the ground, that feeling of solidity, maybe pressure, tingling. And this really helps us reground in this present moment, physical reality. And then as you're ready, you can bring movement back in and open your eyes. So, what I'd like us to do for the next maybe 10 minutes or so, or maybe we'll just, I'll feel maybe like 6 minutes or so, is to break into maybe groups of four, it'll be groups of three or four. And the reason is there are many ways to explore Dharma, besides meditating and reading and listening to teachings. And usually, traditionally, practice of these things that the Buddha taught takes place in a monastic community. That's traditionally what happened. And I lived in a monastic community for 4.5 years. So what happens is after someone gives a talk, it's really cool because you work together or you take a walk together and you're like, hey, so what was it that she said? And wait, what did he mean? What do you think he meant like that? And, you know, I really feel it in my life when this happens. And so you deepen your understanding and your exploration and connection as you kind of refresh and review and share the teachings and our understanding of the teaching. And again, like I said, there's also a lot of lived wisdom in the room. And some of the greatest teachings I've ever had in my life have been through what one of my Dharma siblings has told me. Seriously, like, it'll be interesting. I know I've heard the same thing from my teacher, but they'll put a spin on it that just hits me in a certain way and pops it alive. Yeah. And I know that some people are new here or newer, and some people know each other. And especially if you're introverted like I am, you might not enjoy these exercises so much. And as a matter of fact, you may, like me, want to bolt every time you hear that someone's going to do it, right? But even if it's a little uncomfortable, I found that as we engage, it really does soften and deepen and connect us with our practice, with our understanding a little bit more. And even those of us who are hesitant are glad we did it afterwards. Like my husband Mark says, I always hated, excuse me for sharing this, but I'm saying to Mark, I think he wouldn't mind, is, you know, when you say, let's do this exercise and break into small groups, and then he said, but I always come away feeling like I learned something. So, you know. So I hope you'll engage, and maybe even some new Dharma friendships will blossom. So let's just, I'm going to say, if you have been around a few years, try to get into a group. I'm going to see how this works with a few people, two or three people that you don't know so well. Okay? And so let's just randomly see how that works. Like, those of you in the front row, look for people who are tending to sit more near the back, or you don't know people. And then what'll happen, and then I'll tell you once we've broken into groups, I'll tell you what's going to happen.
Yes.
Three or four or five. I mean, it's loose. Just what I didn't really count. Yeah. It's okay if it's a little bigger. Lauren? Oh, okay.
We are.
Okay.
What are we doing?
Okay, so Jay, can you put back that first slide? This is something that we're going to talk about is our homework from last week, which even if you weren't here, is something you can reflect on, right? Which is simply noticing when in your life and in your days does your heart feel open and when does it feel closed? When does it feel soft? When does it feel tight? You know, did you notice? Did you pay attention this week? If you did, you might share what you paid attention to. If not, we'll just take a minute to reflect. Like, what do we notice? Like, I'm back driving in American traffic. You know, when does my heart feel tight and closed? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, this is going to be, I'm not going to give everybody a minute to talk. I'm going to ask that you self-regulate, try and make sure everyone has a moment or has some engagement, and just have a free discussion and sharing about what you've noticed about when's your heart open, when's it closed, how does that feel, what comes of that. Is that clear? And then in about 5 minutes, I'll ring the bell. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. And first, please go around and tell everyone your names. I didn't mean to say that. So, please introduce yourself.
I'm Lauren. I'm Jen. Lisa. I'm the
Brian.
Yeah.
Brian
J.
But I noticed last week.
November.
Is that my heart
is
biased?
Okay. See what we get.
I can go first.
I'm just ready for the whole time.
I think have guys.
I think that's one.
The last word is like, yeah.
It's also not, maybe they don't need to mean, I guess.
It doesn't. So for me, it's not a much, I feel like we're pushing, I don't feel it was good. And so the guys were beating it on the last thing, straight from the body, like, you are.
I feel, I feel increased contraction, you know, when something feels, you know, critical or terminal or something like that.
It kind of shut down and they were, I realized that they were here trying it often, that I'm shutting down, but I didn't.
Being open and closed.
That like seems to come from nowhere.
So about.
No.
It's a genre active to strengthen.
It's the same, right?
I notice how like I just kind of wake up.
I think the shit might be about the open roads, but. X-rays.
There's the shell and then it has to sort of crack through.
When was it closed?
Always hard to find.
And then it's like web is more open. And then no, it's cool, it feels like, and it's one of those times that like anything drives me and my heart is shaking.
So that's what we get.
That's probably not the picture, but that's beautiful, so that's nice.
Just behaving, you know, like in
becomes close, I feel like opening it,
like,
or when people like either thinking about me or thinking about me that I love myself, like
I can see you look, and it's not because of laziness, it's because, well, it's not
you know, things that I don't want to see,
you know, but no, I gotta be honest.
Or like they have a secret situation where they saw it was good than I meant.
So that's
yeah, when people are judging me, and especially with like some very
so it sounds like that's related to
really
for like
it.
Expectation,
yeah, like,
you know, societal expectation. I feel that.
That's real.
Yeah.
After like something that I like
very
deeply trying to
figure out. Well, maybe another dimension of that is just sort of like the fast pace of things. You know, the faster that we're moving, the
more
attention there is around that. Whereas when we get slow, a life down, I find like, what, you know, being outside is very true or something like that.
I'm really just making these connections.
I was
talking to the top.
Making you feel connected to something bigger.
But I did.
Connecting with the community and it gets
my heart open.
I noticed what you're actually down the road that you can
also for me
and also started doing more. And I noticed recognizing my heart is
open.
So yeah, there's like with what I did right and what I did wrong.
It just kind of makes me think, because a lot of times, I don't do it right.
So, something, you know, it's more like brushing myself tight around me. So, but the more I do that, I've noticed that for me,
I'm
don't know if I'm not quite.
Yeah.
Or.
That I'm very angry about. For me this weekend, and that, cause I love it, and so I'm just.
Even if they are.
I have just recognized.
Like trying to. When I go in the beginning, I think I'm just trying, even if I try like.
Just be open.
Like, I just have a lot of.
Start and show, but it's one where it was so beautiful. Now recognizing that. That always, I mean, that is.
It just in your shoulders.
And also.
Or that it keeps us to go, like, open back up.
So that you're describing where you get the chance to somehow structure it.
So if I were to do it the same way,
much better.
It's a decision.
So do us both a favor. And I'm actually something different. Shift that future.
In a way where I was talking about.
So bring things to a natural close. If anyone hasn't said. Spoken and have another half a minute to speak. Feels like was so exciting they or profound or funny or that they want to share it or need to share it before we go on. Yeah.
I realized that it's all about me.
Uh-huh.
As in like my judgment of me in the moment, like, oh, I did a good thing, yay, world is good.
Yeah.
Oh, I did a bad thing, shut everybody out.
Uh-huh.
It's like I feel threatened. I don't feel confident, uh-huh. I feel bad, I feel good, I feel amazing, I feel happy, and it's like from that, everything rolls.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I'm realizing that it's me making the decision. I'm gonna be mad now, therefore shut down the heart, or
uh-huh.
I'm gonna
cool.
be happy. Yeah.
Yeah, open it up.
Yay!
Cool, thank you.
I would say when our group had a little talk about opening spaces up for ourselves during our busy work time,
uh-huh.
trying to actually separate some space where we could have some peace
mm-hmm.
and not allow the distractions to pile down on us.
Yeah, so you actually needed to create some space for that to open up. Yeah, thank you. Good thing to contemplate, right, and put into practice. All right, so I want to start just quickly. Let's hit some high points. What do people remember from last time? That was really funny. I wish you could have
been sitting here. There's four measurables.
Stark raving terror.
The one thing that I kept coming back to was the thought that we want everybody in the world to want everyone else to be happy.
Sweet. Great. We want everyone in the world to want everyone else to be happy. And that would be the immeasurable of equanimity. Equanimity.
Okay.
Yeah. That sense of what we said, that equanimity, we get this idea of I'm sitting here peacefully no matter what.
Right.
But equanimity, that's that beautiful thing. We really want everyone in the world to want everyone in the world to be happy. Okay, right? Okay, so we want everyone in the world to want everyone in the world to be, wish everyone. Anybody else remember anything? Someone said there are four immeasurables. I thought that was pretty good. So there are four immeasurables. Seriously, I mean, this is okay. Does anyone remember what's
joy, love, equanimity, and compassion.
Joy, love, equanimity, and compassion. Okay. Anything else land and or resonate?
They're good to live by.
And they're good to live by. See, maybe they're good. It's good to know that we can develop them. You know, they're both our natural birthright, and they're something that we can actually develop even if we don't feel them now. All right. Great. Yeah.
It was interesting doing this homework over the last week as I was talking to my group here about how I was noticed. I mean, I like to think I'm this unbiased person that just will listen to all equally, but I did notice that when certain people would walk into my sphere, I would have a tendency to listen to them more harshly, right? Or not really want to even hear what they're saying. And I would feel myself closing up in ways, subtle little ways I hadn't paid attention to before, right? So it was really great to notice how my expectations were setting me up to fail. Because what if this person said something I really needed to learn in that day and I was too locked up in those old expectations of, you know, maybe they were like that 1,000 times before, but maybe something happened since the last time I saw them.
Right.
And to set myself up to keep the relationship going the way it was by grasping on to the negative way that it was.
Yeah.
That's
great. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you really engaged with it this week.
Yeah. I think
okay. So we're in a class called the Four Immeasurables because there are indeed four immeasurables. So next slide. They are often called the Brahma Viharas, and we talked about how Vihara means abode, and Brahma is like the divine, or literally that being that's greater than all others, and that it came from the Pali Canon of the collection of the long discourses or words of the Buddha. So that's who actually taught the Four Immeasurables was Buddha. And it's immeasurable love, or metta, right? Immeasurable compassion, or karuna. Immeasurable joy, mudita. And immeasurable equanimity, which is upeksha. And as Terry said, equanimity means everyone wishes that everyone else have happiness, joy, ease, safety, well-being. And so, again, to review the practice, in the Tibetan, I noticed I left out mother sentient beings, but traditionally it's really all mother sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all mother sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all mother sentient beings never be separated from the bliss that knows no suffering. And may all sentient mother sentient beings dwell in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and aversion. So that's the full practice. And what we did today for as loving kindness for ourselves could also be done as where it says, may all sentient mother sentient beings, you can also give this the wishes for the four to yourself. So may I have happiness in its causes. May I be free from suffering in its causes. May I never be separated from the bliss that knows no suffering. And may I dwell in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and aversion. Right. I really like that. I love this full version. It just feels so, and we, again, it's like every time I start to teach and I think, oh, I can do a 6-week class on this. And then I start to get into it and I thought, I could do about 5-6 week classes on courses on this. It's just so juicy. So again, I want to just briefly go over the plan for the course. So next.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
What's the meaning behind, why don't we just say all sentient beings? Why do you say mother sentient beings?
I was wondering if that would come up. Because one of the ways of developing in Tibetan culture the heart of compassion is, and it's very fundamental, is that if you understand that the mind continues on. It's a mind stream, continuous mind stream, right? It never begins and it never ends. And so we would say that what this mind stream is made up of is the karmic seeds that ripen in each lifetime and in between in the bardo. And so given that it's from beginningless beginning, we've all been each other's mother at some point. And traditionally, yes, even your mother's mother, you have been your mother's mother. And so traditionally, the Tibetans had such a warm, naturally loving feeling of belonging and love and gratitude towards their mother, that it would just bring this wellspring of compassion and good wishes for another being, human or non-human, because they thought, oh, I have been your mother, you have been my child, right? And you have been my mother, I have been your child, and that just brings this connection. So, and this gets a little bit what we're getting into today, when the Tibetans came to the United States and to the West in general, but mainly to the US, and started teaching meditation, well, meditate on all beings being your mother. They noticed that the minds and the hearts of Westerners was not getting more happy and open. And it was actually the opposite, that they were kind of feeling like, but I'm so angry. It was making them angry and upset and feeling this deficit and bringing up all these issues. And so the Western lamas, the lamas teaching in the West, started dropping mother because of that. But traditionally, some still use it and some don't. But
for me, it reminds me, because usually they know,
yeah,
unconditional love for your child.
Exactly. And that's the idea, that if we were to live with seeing each sentient being as our child, right, then what would happen is we would feel that unconditional love and acceptance. That love that, yeah, I still have to say, do your homework, or you did this wrong, so you're going to your room, but there's still unconditional love that flows through it all. The door of the heart is open, no matter what, right? Thank you for the question. So the class plan was, we went over the four immeasurables. Today we'll do the first immeasurable, metta, loving kindness, and then next week we'll finish up loving kindness and do compassion, and then empathetic joy, and equanimity. And I'll talk about the Tibetan Mahayana version of the Four Immeasurables. And then we'll wrap up and catch up and hopefully talk about karma, wisdom, and the Four Immeasurables. So today we're going to focus on loving kindness and metta. And one of the images is, as Denny just talked about, was this image is of the Metta Sutta is like a caring mother holding and guarding the life of her only child. So with a boundless heart of loving kindness, hold yourself and all living beings as your beloved children. Right? This is a Jack Kornfield translation of this. So it takes a little poetic license, but I think it's really beautiful. So. No. And the reason that we start with loving kindness, with metta, is it's a foundation for all the following immeasurables. And in fact, some commentaries actually say that the other three are just variations on the first one, which is interesting, right? And loving kindness is called metta in the Pali language. And the Pali was an early Buddhist language where the earliest Buddhist were the earliest words of the Buddhas were written down in the Pali language, which is a derivative of Sanskrit for those of you who are interested in that. And basically, loving kindness is simply love. Right? It really is simply love. It's the force that connects all things. And we long for this love. And we long to love and be loved. And last time we said the word love can mean vastly different things, from I really love Chinese food, right? To I love you, to I love all sentient beings. And I started thinking about this, thinking the same way we talked about genuine happiness, is happiness that comes from the inside out. It's what we bring to our life rather than we get from our life. It's the opposite of consumerism. Well, maybe we could think of loving kindness as genuine love, right? When the ground of genuine love, like it says, is a boundless heart of loving kindness. It's that unconditional love, free of judgment and beyond blame. And it has no conditions, so it says, I don't care whether you quote-unquote deserve it or you don't deserve it. No matter who you are, no matter what you've done, the door of my heart is open to you. So one of the things that I've noticed is my heart tightens when I have to correct somebody. And I started noticing that, and I find it really interesting because I'm closing the door of my heart because I'm uncomfortable, right? When in actuality, I could give that feedback that's uncomfortable for me to give and keep the door of my heart open. I'm really doing it, closing the door of my heart because I'm uncomfortable.
Why do you have to give that?
Why do you have to give that feedback? Sometimes you have to say to a child that's about to run in the street, you know, no, stop, get back here right now, right? So, and some there are things that people do that are not okay. It's not okay. We need to harm. We have a bodhisattva vow, many of us, and that includes stopping people that are going to harm others. The issue is we start to hate the people we're stopping. We make them wrong. Right? And we close our hearts to them. And we think, you're wrong. You don't deserve my love. You don't deserve my caring. But you over there that were about to be harmed, I care for you. So a boundless heart is, yes, I have to stop you because I love you as much as I love the other person. That's loving kindness.
Well, also I've observed, of course, that people who do mean, unkind, bad things are often not loving themselves.
Right.
Yeah. They're wounded inside.
Yeah. Exactly. And often you hear great stories of loving kindness turning someone's life around. And that's what restorative justice is based on, for instance. So exactly. And I also want to say loving kindness, this is a love with wisdom. Yeah.
The first principle of yoga is no harm.
Right.
And when I was reading the book, it talks about it, not harming others, but then I understand, or harm yourself in any way.
Exactly.
You have to do it for yourself first so you can understand why you're not supposed to be real.
Right, you can't harm yourself either, exactly, because otherwise you don't understand. And that's why where we're starting here, this practice of metta, of loving kindness towards ourselves. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You got it. Thank you. Yeah. So I wanted to share something that the practice of metta is traditionally said by the Buddha taught it had many benefits, that it releases us from fear, it releases us from danger, it has this long list of you'll accomplish all your spiritual goals and so on. It's very interesting, though. He actually, I think I mentioned this last time, he doesn't say it will take you all the way to enlightenment, but he basically takes you right up close. And, you know, it basically, it softens the mind and heart and leads us to this sense of connection and kindness and genuine happiness. But I also thought, because we love modern science, I would share it, there's actually now research on people who do this meditation. And they found that it's different from people who do a straight mindfulness meditation. Okay? Sure. So there's a lot of meditation researchers. People like Alan Wallace, who are big meditators and scholars, have wanted us to do meditation research for ages. And now people are doing it. And a lot of them are coming from the neuroscience field, and others are coming from the positive psychology field. So between those two, they've started looking at very fine differences. Like if I just do mindfulness, which is non-judgmentally paying attention in the present moment as I sit here to my breath or to what arises, or, you know, versus doing this metta, this loving kindness meditation, what are the differences, right? And what are the benefits specific to loving kindness? And what they found is, if you, those who practice metta, there's some overlap, like everyone has increased health benefits, like your blood pressure goes down and your overall health increases. And there's like a list on the internet of 101 benefits from meditating, and all of those still apply. But what they found is that to do metta specifically really deeply decreases the stress hormones in our body, which is interesting. It decreases inflammation. It decreases pain in people who have chronic pain. It decreases migraines, which is really interesting to me. And it really decreases the negative effects of PTSD, which straight mindfulness meditation doesn't necessarily do. And then on the positive side, it tends to increase the feelings of well-being, self-worth, joy, compassion, and then gratitude, empathy, connectivity. And then they've also saw that behaviorally it increases altruistic action in the world, Gesundheit. And it also increases creativity. So if you're a creative person and you want to get your creative juices flowing, start doing loving kindness meditation. And it's really, it's interesting to me, there's this, I came across this great story of a psychiatrist, I think it was, who was working in a mental institution, and someone noted, people started noting that his patients just, and their health and their well-being increased far greater than anyone else's. And a student came and said, you know, I want to just follow you around and see what it is that you're doing that these other guys and gals aren't doing. So I said, okay, I start my day at this point. And so the student came into the office. And as usual, if you're a medical professional, you always have charts waiting for you on the desk. So he started going through each of the charts, picking it up, looking at the picture attached, thinking about it, and then saying to the patient, I love you.
Oh, is it Opanamana?
I love you, yeah. You know, each one taking that moment and then putting it down and going through every chart of every person he was going to see that day. So the practice order of metta, next slide, is that, again, we start with doing it towards ourselves, and then towards someone you have fond, warm feelings towards, and then someone who's neutral, and then those traditionally I call them enemies, but I like to call them the troublemakers in our lives, right? Because we may not think, oh, I've got an enemy, but we have those people that are just troublemakers right now for us. You know? So why linger on loving kindness for ourselves first? So I'm sure you're familiar with that instruction, the safety instruction when you fly, which is, in the event that the oxygen masks deploy, secure your own first and then help the child next to you, right? If you're traveling with the child. So it's that same thing. If you don't actually take care of yourself first, you're not going to be in any condition or shape to take care of the person sitting next to you. And so it's really no accident that loving kindness is taught towards ourselves first. And it's in this way a perfect system, because what it means is when we increase our own altruistic, warm-hearted love for ourselves, our own sense of well-being, happiness, creativity, contentment, belonging, and joy increases. And then the Buddha said, another loose translation is, if you truly love yourself, you'll easily love another. Okay? If you truly, which I would translate in my case, genuinely love yourself, you'll easily love another. If you genuinely, truly love yourself, you will never harm another. Okay? So when we feel genuinely filled up and nourished ourselves, and we increase the connection with our own warm heart, then our loving kindness is going to naturally flow out, right, to the whole world. So last time I mentioned, we talked about, started on this idea that here a lot of us don't have a great relationship with ourselves, right? And I often think when people say, well, who's your primary relationship with, like, meaning like who's your primary partner, and oh yeah, my husband Mark, or whoever, my partner so-and-so, or my wife, or, and really, it's with ourselves, right? And I told this story before, and I just love it, about a friend of mine who had a friend come to visit, and he noticed that she had a wedding band on her left hand, and the two friends had just recently, from a distance, been sharing all these stories of heartbreak, and breakups, and online dating, and that not working out. So he's really surprised. He's like, Jane, did you get married like in the last week or so? And she smiled and said, yes. He said, like, who did you get married to? She said, well, I married myself. He was like, so how's it going? And she said, you know, there are the usual communication problems. But I think it's going to work out in the long run. And it's so true. I mean, we touched on it last week. There's so many of us that feel this sense of deficiency, of self-loathing, of self-hatred, of self-criticism. And when we're caught in self-loathing, we're really caught in what one of my favorite teachers, Tara Brach, calls the trance of unworthiness, right? I love that, the trance. Because what happens in a trance?
You can't see anything else.
You're hypnotized, right? You're kind of not asleep, but you're not awake.
Right.
Yeah? So in the trance, our heart and mind, they do that close down, they contract. Yeah? And in that trance of unworthiness, we forget that there are people that care about us. We forget about our own ability to care for ourselves. And the biggest thing is we don't even often recognize that we're in a trance. The other thing about being in a trance is we're often kind of disembodied. Right? We don't even really feel. We're not feeling our emotions. We're not feeling our bodies. We're kind of just into this looping reactivity where our core feeling is like, something's wrong with me, something's wrong with me, something's wrong with me, you know, or I shouldn't do that, or I shouldn't have done that, or I should have been it that way, and you know, just whatever flows out. And so we're either holding on to I should have or I shouldn't have, which is really a grasping on or a pushing away, which is the fundamental thing the Buddha taught we're always doing. And so it's as someone once said, it's like self-loathing or a sense of unworthiness has become the very air that I breathe. That a lot of us can relate to that. And so when we're in that trance, that feeling, then it gets to be really hard sometimes when we try to develop this relationship with ourselves, when we try to marry ourselves, right? Hopefully it's a love relationship. And I want to give here a nod to PTSD, right? Because a lot of us have experienced real trauma, and a lot of us are in a post-traumatic state where we're easily triggered, and it's very, very tender. And so when we work with loving kindness or with any meditation, we need to really recognize that and be gentle with ourselves. And so this subject of unworthiness and so on, I feel is like so fundamental in this trance of unworthiness and this disassociation. I hear about it from so many people I talk to. I've experienced it myself. I feel like it's rampant, and we could, and I have done like a whole retreat with just like touching the iceberg on how to work with this in meditation and so on. What is the point for today? The point is, how are we going to find an entrance point, an entrance doorway into the metta practice, into loving ourselves, when we're in this Western milieu of a self-critical mind and heart that's closed down to ourselves? You know, where's the entry point? Can we jump right in? Maybe some of us can, and maybe that's not so open to some of us. So what I thought of is that, next slide, that what I'd start with, we'll take a break in a minute, and then I'm going to do a pre-metta meditation, okay? A pre-metta practice, self-loving kindness meditation. And this method comes from Ajahn Brahm, the Australian Theravadan monk, who's fabulous, and he literally grew up on the street, so he has no PC correct dharma bone in his body, which I totally love. When I get teachers like that, I go for it. You know, I love that. So he's hilarious, and he's great, and he's insightful, and he has, like so many people now, books out and YouTube videos, so go for it. But what he compares this practice to is, it's like, how many of you have ever camped? How many of you have ever like lit a campfire or a fire in a stove or like that? Yeah? So how do you start?
Small.
Yeah.
Little pieces.
Like little, like often even twigs, and sometimes like, I can't even start with twigs. I often start with paper.
Paper, yeah.
And what's the modern thing that we do?
Pour gasoline
on it. Let's take the easy way out. We're Americans. So that this is like this entrance into metta is that we like with when you're building a campfire, you start with anything small that is easy to light, right? So maybe a piece of paper, maybe some little twigs, maybe some dried pine cones or dried needles. There I go, dried needles or like that. And then you add kindling, which is what? Just slightly bigger little strips of wood, right? And then you add a little bit, like tiny little, I don't know, would you call them branches or logs or something. And then you add thicker pieces of wood. And then finally, when the fire is just roaring, you can start to throw on big old sappy, soggy logs, and they burn up in it, right? And so I thought of, I love this because it's like this, oh, there we go. I reversed my slides. You know, it's the pre-metta meditation. It's like you get this inner campfire going, and then suddenly you're warming this whole circle of friends. And metta is actually often compared to a warm and radiant fire burning in our hearts. And I don't know about you, I can relate to that. It's like when my heart creaks open, it actually feels a little painful at first. I don't know if you feel that, but it's almost like there's a catch there and a little bit of a tug and sometimes a little pain. And then it starts to warm up and that starts to melt away. And if I keep feeding that, that warmth, that love just starts to get bigger and bigger and more radiant. And so just that way, our practice of metta, we're not going to be able to light the fire of loving kindness with those big old sappy logs, right? We have to start with something small. We have to start with kindling. And we may even want to do something that pours gasoline on it, I don't know, to really get it going if we get stuck. So that's what we're going to do. Let's take a... Oh, announcements. Okay, we'll do quick announcements, and then Jay will change the slide to the appropriate tea break slide.
Hey,
and turn the heat up.
We're trying a new announcement format tonight, so let me know if you like it, and do the announcements before the break. But Lama Ami's course on the Four Measurables is going to be continuing to the end of September. Not starting next week, but the following week, Heather is going to be teaching an in-depth course on Tibetan Buddhist meditation. And so if you're new to meditation, this is a great class. If you've been meditating forever, this is a great class. And it's 10 weeks, so we're going to go over a lot of material, posture, meditation objects, obstacles to meditation, the results of meditation, and that's on Wednesday nights, starting September 14th. Yes, September 14th, from 6:30 to 8:30 here.
And I just want to say, truly, it's one of the most amazing courses. I know all this material that's being taught and covered in 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so if you're interested, if you need a refresher, which we often all do, or if you know anyone that's been interested in meditating and wants to learn and really learn in depth, this is it. This is like, and it only this particular course only comes around once every few years or so. For a couple of years, yeah.
And then on Thursday nights from 6:30 to 7:30, we're having a meditation group. And we do meditation and we discuss how our practice is going. And that's also here. On September 17th and 18th from 10 to 4 p.m., we're having a two-day workshop with Geshe Soltram. And he's going to be teaching on the 21 Taras.
Is that the same guy as before?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so he just taught the last course on refuge. And he's an amazing teacher. And the Taras, the teachings will be on compassion and protection. And we don't have too many details on that yet.
Yeah.
And at the end of that, he's going to be giving the refuge vows. So for anyone who went to those Three Jewels courses that he taught and you want to take the refuge vows, let me know by Friday. I'll be emailing him Saturday the names of the people that are.
And that's when you get a Buddhist name and you officially become a Buddhist.
And if you want to retake your vows, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And then Elaine Jackson is going to be returning. She's going to be teaching beginning meditation for one day on September 29th. Correct? From 6:30 to 8:30, and that's a Thursday. And then she's going to be leading a one-day retreat on October 1st, correct?
Correct.
What times are that?
I think it's 10 to 4.
Yeah,
she's been out of,
yeah.
She's been at teachings for the last 3 weeks, so we're waiting to get the particulars, which
yeah.
should arrive tomorrow.
Yeah, so we'll have more details of that in a couple days. But so October 1st is going to be late. And I think that's it for the next month. We have donables in the back by supporting our center. You can support the Sangha, which helps us pay rent on this space and continue to expand our programs. And we also have a bowl for the teacher, which allows her to continue to teach. We also have a volunteer sign up sheet. We need lots of volunteers to help come open the spaces, bring flowers and offer to the altar, bring snacks for the group, and also clean up. And we have a new volunteer opportunity with our water in the back. If you have the time to go to the co-op and get and fill the bottle, we have an empty one, I think, so if anyone wants to do that and bring it back here, that's another need that we have now.
It's like $1.20 to fill it or something.
Yeah,
it's really
less than $2 to fill. It's a tiny bottle, so it's heavy, but it's not like the giant
And everything here is volunteer, right? Nobody's paid to do
yes,
this.
Yes, everything's
work, so.
Volunteer. And so the bowls and the sign-in sheet and then these flyers are all in the back. And yeah, we have tea and snacks.
And then I want to spring something in, which is if there should be an email sign up in the
yes.
back, right? If you want to receive some additional materials for this course, be sure that your name and email is on our email list, and then we'll try and figure out, we'll go through, and I want to send out some things to people who are interested. So if you're interested, be sure that maybe we'll even send out, maybe we can send around a list.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Enjoy break. Okay, Jay, you have to flip this the slide though.
The tea break slide.
The tea break slide. Thank you.
Yeah. Did you catch the email that I sent about times to meet?
I did. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, just want to make sure.
No, that's all gonna. Thank you for telling me that maybe I should make it that long. But I'm going to work on my schedule for a little
while. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I didn't know. So
I
just want to make sure.
No,
no rush.
Are you going away?
Yeah, I am around.
Okay, let's pick a time. I'll send you some times. So let's do Friday, Saturday, or Monday.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, that works.
Okay. Maybe a little more hot water would be good.
Hi. I was wondering if you would like to do some way or some time, because I'm not really sure what you might means or understand. I don't want to say that I'm going to do it, but I've been reading some stuff, but I thought it was Pamela, and she suggested that I just talk to you about it, trying to get it. I don't want to be
right.
Saying, okay, I want to
yeah.
do this,
absolutely.
This, this, this.
Exactly. So, yeah, you definitely So if we have a hard time connecting to my mind, just like then write them out and get you apart so that you understand what they are. And none of us do them perfectly because we
can't do it. Just to give you a look, I want to do this. I was raised in a
Baptist.
One of the things that was part of it is Baptist.
Right.
And so when I was a boy,
That's part of why we love this, is for the, all of us teachers say, the high good is not something that tells you to vote for it, and so why do we have a meeting?
And so we do it now. That's how I am. When I'm not teaching, I go to another teacher. I'm like her. I don't really talk with people, and I just want to stay in my zone and go.
And she's been teaching smart classes, which is really good stuff. Not just setting everything up. Not teaching on the same, but the HR. You have a tip for other kids to talk
about.
Okay.
I'm just going to keep going.
I don't think
you need to keep going. What's the bigger one, the gong? Someone went out. I'll go check.
Okay. So we're going to do the next bit as a meditation, and that moment when the whole room goes silent and you're crunching. It's a good time to apply loving kindness. So this is going to be a meditation of the what we can call the pre-metta meditation. Metta meditation, the loving kindness towards ourselves. And you'll notice that I'm not going to use the traditional words of the meditation, and we'll address and talk about that later. But right now, what I would like you to do is find whatever posture you're going to be really comfortable in, and that could include lying down, that could include standing, and that could include sitting on a chair or on a cushion, whatever is the most stable, comfortable, and perfect for your body right now, tonight. Right? So find that posture. Okay. And again, it's always helpful to begin by withdrawing our awareness, the entanglement we have with the outer world, with our five senses. Letting that entanglement go and bringing our full awareness into the felt, physical, tactile sensations of the body so that we're bringing it inside in the domain of the body. And then, again, bring your awareness to the felt, tactile, physical sensations now associated with breath in the body. Wherever you experience it, you may feel the rise and fall of your shoulders. You may feel the subtle expansion and release in your abdomen. The expansion of your rib cage, whatever physical sensations associated with breathing, bringing your full attention to those. Now bring to mind one small thing that you love. Like this is the fire starter step. So whatever your object is, make it an imaginary being, not a real one. So for instance, I like to initiate my metta meditation by imagining an abandoned kitten living under a dumpster. And then see if you can allow it to feel really present. Then begin to notice as you feel and think of its presence, you bring its presence to mind. If you feel its presence in your heart, how it resonates. Like for me, I begin to see that small kitten and my heart just naturally begins to glow, to warm very softly with this warmth of love, of caring. So whatever it is for you, noticing that visceral feeling in your heart. And then in your mind, in your heart, begin to speak to your sweet being. Little being, never feel alone again. Never feel so afraid. You won't have to. I will always look after you. I care for you, little one. Wherever you go, whatever you do, my heart is open to you and will welcome you. And then take a moment finding your own words that you would say to this sweet being. And then again, gently shift the attention onto the region around your heart and see if you feel a soft, gentle, even small ember of a warm glow of the emotion of loving kindness. And then as you feel ready, releasing the presence of your imaginary friend, creature, loving object. That sweet being. And return for a moment your attention to the breath and the body. Just feeling, noticing, becoming aware of how you feel in your body, in your heart. It's not like a mental taking stock, but just, yeah, feeling more of experientially, just feeling what you feel. Whatever it is, it's okay. You just want to experience it. And next, we'll bring to mind a real being for whom it's easy for you to generate some loving kindness, some warm feelings towards. And in the campfire metaphor, this will be the kindling. So it's someone, human or non-human, who's uncomplicated, maybe close to you emotionally. It could be your pet, a loved relation, your best friend. Personally, I find it easy to bring to mind someone who needs my love and protection, so it's my 14-year-old dog. And then once again, when you have their presence, when you have that image and presence established in your mind's eye, paint that feeling picture with words. Oh, dear one. I care for you. I will always be there for you. Wherever you go, whatever you do, the door of my heart will stay open to you. My heart will always welcome you. I give you my limitless loving kindness, unconditionally. And again, going on with whatever words, or some people are more visceral, just a warm feeling in your heart, flowing towards this special being in your life. And again, very gently shift the focus so that your attention comes to the region around your heart. And feel that warm glow of the emotion of loving kindness, the sensations. Again, no worries if they're small or large. It's more just to get in touch with what your heart is feeling, to begin to become familiar with how it feels when your heart begins to crack open or melt open, or even just slightly open in the smallest way with loving kindness. And then again, gently releasing the presence, the mental image of this sweet being for whom you were generating loving kindness. And bring your awareness to the felt physical sensation of your breath. And then the next step is to bring to mind an image of yourself if you're ready. If you're not, you can again find another being whom you naturally feel quite close to. But if you're ready, you can bring to mind an image of yourself that naturally brings up a feeling of caring and warmth, of protection, of love. For many people, it's an image of themselves as a newborn baby. It could be an image of yourself as a child. And not so much a storyline, but just some image that evokes that feeling of, ah, so sweet, I love you. For me, it's always an image of myself as a newborn. And then, again, beginning to send this flow of love through your words, or through your visceral sense of love in your heart. Oh, little one, oh, sweet one, oh, dear one, I care for you. I love you, little one. Wherever you go, whatever you do, my heart will always be open to you. My heart will always welcome you. Or whatever words come from your heart, from your mind, and flow out to this presence, this image of yourself as one who elicits, who brings forth that feeling of loving kindness. And then again, gently shifting your awareness away from yourself, from your image of yourself. And notice what you feel in your heart. Notice if you're feeling a warm glow of the emotion of loving kindness. Notice if you're feeling something else or a mix. And then releasing the meditation, coming right back to the felt physical sensation of breath in your body. And as you are ready, bringing movement back in and opening your eyes. So, how was that? Yeah?
Hard to focus only on one person.
Oh, hard to focus only on one person? Like you wanted to focus on more, like a stream of people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anything else? Anyone else? Did anyone find it just really difficult to do, even at the beginning? Yeah. So that was actually going through three steps fairly quickly, right? And what you can do at home is just even take that first step. Just find that first, really settle in and find that first image, that first whatever it is that opens your heart with love, not so much compassion of, and it can be, but not, because there's a sense of protector, I'll love you, I'll protect you, I'll be there for you. But what I mean by not compassion, it's like for me, if I'm doing a compassion opening of my heart, it really, I just start thinking of all the refugees, to be honest, you know, their struggle. And then it's an opening of the heart, it's more of a sense of compassion, which hasn't, again, it's an outcropping of loving kindness. What we're looking for here is that warm heart of love, of a positive emotion towards them, and like that just naturally comes with, because that's how it starts to build. Once you feel love, you immediately want to protect. You want them to have good things, right? So it's that sense of like when I see my little dumpster kitten, it's just I immediately, like, I get all warm and fuzzy inside, and I just love you, you know, and that warm feeling. So what we're looking for, again, is with the campfire metaphor, is where's our entry point, right? Like, where do we begin to have access? And we can just stay there for a long time. We could just do that much for weeks. And for some people, it is not just one thing. It's like, oh, there's a kitten and I feel it. Oh, and then there's a puppy. And I, you know, it's like this kind of stream of images that come out. And that's okay too. So the beautiful thing here is you can play with your own images. You can play with your own words. It's not a set traditional format. So it's like, what are your words come out? Just some people, like I said, are very verbal and they come up with, I love you, my heart is open to you, and just all these things. Other people just start feeling immediately the warmth in their heart, and it's more visceral and nonverbal. And that's okay too. The cool thing about meditation is no one's watching you, and no one knows what you're doing inside, right? So you can be, I would like to say, as free as a kid in the sandbox, just playing away. That's how it should be, that happy and free. And, oh, you know, what really honestly brings this up for me, this feeling of love? And for some of us, it's hard. You know, it's hard to reconnect with even a little feeling of love. So a tiny ember, just the smallest little movement of a glow, to just begin to feel that, is really a big thing, and that's a positive step. And so to go, yeah, that's cool. I just felt that little flutter, and that felt good, you know? And then those, I wanted to go through all of the steps, because for other people, it's really easily accessed, right? We're all different. We all come with our own histories, our own karma, so we say. And for other people, like my friend who's just this big, loving, she calls herself the faucet because each and everything, right, just touches her heart and she's, tears are coming out, tears of joy, tears of love, tears of sorrow, it doesn't matter, it's just, so she goes through this and it's just, can be very easily accessible, so she would go through the steps more rapidly and come to something like herself more rapidly, which, does that make sense? Yeah.
Ask you, is it possible that this may be easier for women than for men?
Yeah.
Because there's a nurturing side that women naturally, roles that they are developed and that they're able to exercise in a way that a lot of men don't necessarily do.
It might be in our culture, that's very true. Yeah.
Naturally, men should be more close to it. The
hormones,
just the way the
hormones
work.
Yeah, and I would say that, and then I would say, well, the Buddha taught this, and he was a man, and it was practiced by pretty much all male monastics to great effect over generations and centuries. So that's why I'm saying in our culture, and especially in our culture, yeah. And
you don't want to see the Mexican
culture. No. And so it's different culture to culture. I mean, that's exactly what the teachers found when they brought Tibetan Buddhism here. So the thing that we're always sifting out is just, if it's harder, does that mean this is something we don't practice? And I would say this one is something we practice even if it's not easily accessible to us. Because it's really a way of developing the foundation for bodhicitta. For loving kindness and the visceral emotional response. And the thing to recognize is, like you said, if you're someone who it is easy, whether you're a man or a woman, for that to open, it's not a matter of success being something big fast. It's more a matter of just finding the access point. So meditating with it over and over and over again until you find a little movement. Like I find personally, when I get busy, it's really hard to do this meditation for me personally. I don't have a naturally open, warm, fuzzy heart. And that loving kindness is something I always have to keep my mind balanced with. I'm much more mental and I love to dig into the nuts and bolts of the philosophy of things and share that. And so for me to do this, especially when I'm busy, it's like it takes me sometimes a long time of just doing it, either in short sessions over and over again, and then finally I'll feel this little stirring right in my heart center, and then it starts to melt a little bit. And it's like, ah. So I don't know. Does that answer your question? And does that help us?
Well, it works for you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking, trying to find something. I mean, I'm married, I have a wife, and I love mm-hmm. her, and you know, but I don't want to say that that's the only person that I can focus on to get that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I had a cat a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had to give her up because of a girlfriend, and I wish I would have kept the cat, actually. I'm not kidding.
No, I believe you. I believe you, yeah.
So,
so if you have that cat, those are access points, and that's what the instructions are, like wherever you find the access point. So if that's cat, you know, and that cat, again, one of the things that happens is that as, it's very paradoxical, but as we do this, one of the things that often happens is the opposite emotions start to come up. So for instance, we might have an image of that cat, of that we gave up, or that you gave up, and you feel the love, and then along with it comes the grief of the loss, right? And so that can happen. So whatever you find, if it's your wife, it may begin there. So we're just looking for a beginning point. Okay? So it's not like, all right, I don't want to, you can say right now, these are the two things that work for me. And that's your starting point. And that's enough, truly. To start wherever that access point is.
Well, I'm just saying that those are two items that work better for me than myself does.
Right, exactly. And so that's what I'm saying is this is all building up to being able to do it ourselves, because the idea is we start with these points, like your wife, your cat, a relationship, what am I trying to say? Like an aunt, an uncle, a cousin, someone who really means something to you, right? Whoever it is, it isn't yourself. For us, that access point is starting to begin to feel, it's easier often for us to feel that warmth than it is immediately towards ourselves. So that's exactly what we're doing. Ellie's patiently been putting her hand up, yeah.
Why did you have us start with something like not real, like mm-hmm. not our dog, but like unknown?
Because that's a good question for us. A number of people, because of that paradox of associations coming up with it, if I think of a Disney movie, okay, like, so I just got back from a week at the beach with my family. I mean, it was kind of interrupted by performing a wedding and so on, but it was still a few days here and there where we were doing things that I don't normally do, like watch movies with an 8-year-old, right? And so we watched this movie called Happy Feet.
Yeah.
It's about penguins, yeah. And it's an animated movie. I don't think I'd probably heard of it. But at a certain point, I was just feeling, all of a sudden I recognized, because I'm preparing to teach this class, I'm feeling this just totally unadulterated warmth towards this little penguin on the screen, you know, this little baby penguin. Because it's imaginary, and it has no associations for me. It's totally pure, right? It has no complications. And then there was something else we were watching, and I just literally started crying. Just my heart was moved, and it was completely imaginary figure, but it touched that loving kindness for me. And I was like, oh, my heart just feels so warm, and I love him, and, you know? and they're all looking at me like I'm nuts, but that's okay. And so that's the reason, is that for a lot of us, especially if we have complicated relationships and so on, if we get that pure, unadulterated, imaginary little kitten, it just touches that.
I'm sorry, I don't differentiate between love and compassion. Uh-huh. How do you, or why do you? What's the difference?
Love, loving kindness is a wishing someone well, okay? Like wanting, the typical way it's talked about is you want to give something to someone with love. One of the ways, the metaphors is if you have a sick child, if this is a little backwards, and with compassion you want to take something away. So with love you want to give, and with compassion you want to take their suffering away. So the metaphor is if you have a sick child, you want to take away their illness and you want to give them an ice cream, like, or a lollipop or something, right? Which gets into a discussion of the order of love and compassion, because, yeah we'll leave that as love, sorry, but that's the difference. With love, it's this outpouring. You just want them to be happy. You wish them well. You just want them to flourish. It's all this positivity, right? You want them to have everything. You want them to be happy and have the wealth and the health and the absolutely everything you can think of. You want them to have it all. And compassion is you want to take away their suffering. You want to take away and heal whatever it is that's causing them pain.
Wait a minute, we know we can't, don't we? We can't really heal other people.
With compassion. We'll get into that with compassion.
Okay.
Bob, you had a question.
Yeah, you've been talking about this in terms of, you know, the kitten, the puppy,
mm-hmm.
even a cartoon character. What about the access point being an event or an activity or something that
mm-hmm.
creates that ember in your heart and using that as the entry point?
Can you give me an example of what you would think of?
I'm thinking of like the homeless breakfast thing and,
uh-huh.
and the act of serving
mm-hmm.
and giving.
Yeah.
And not to any particular person, but that activity itself as being something that generates this this warm feeling in the heart, and using that as a point to dwell on that.
Yeah, that's great, and it is actually in the text that you can do that. You could also have, and it comes up more even for joy than for loving kindness, but that you can think of an event that brings that warmth, like serving the homeless breakfast, or again, for me, it could be the birth of my daughter, right? Like that, those kind of real, those moments in life where your heart just opens. And the memory of that experience can be, recalling that can be the access point. So thank you, that's a great, great point, yeah. Because again, the idea here is what we're doing is access points are important for us because we tend to have difficulty or challenges just dropping right into loving ourselves unconditionally and finding that warmth. And that's what we're doing is these are heart opening exercises, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is like, okay, we're taking this traditional practice and doing it in a very traditional way in baby steps. You know, just, okay, here's an access point. That's like, here's the little piece of paper we're gonna use to light the fire with. Okay, now that little ember is starting to catch the paper on fire, and now I can put this little twig on it and expand it a little bit more. And now, you know, so you just keep adding to whatever it is that increases that feeling of warmth. And then maybe you go, okay, now I go to myself as a child. Oops. Okay, I didn't have the fire going really hot enough yet to do that. I'll just step it back and I'll, you know, so you, again, you play with your edge. Where is it? And sometimes, I will say sometimes when you feel that first catch, like if you do it towards yourself and you feel this catch, just keep going for a while. Because often it's just you have to repeat it slowly over and over again and sink into it. And then suddenly that fire, it's like when you put a big log on your campfire the first time, you think, oh my God, I just put out the whole fire, right? And you're thinking, oh, I'm gonna have to rebuild the whole thing, oh no. But if you are patient and you just keep letting it kind of warm up and blow on it a little bit, you've done this before, I can tell. Then all of a sudden it starts to glow and then it catches and then you have an even bigger fire. So, you know, you play with that and see how does it feel to keep going, to just let that image of myself rest there for a bit. Will it really help my heart even catch more flame with this loving kindness so I can start to direct it towards myself? Again, why are we dwelling on ourselves? Why is this such a big deal? Pardon?
I was just...
Gotta love here before we can love there.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we're all the same.
Right.
If we don't love ourselves, of course we don't love others.
Right. And the more we have that self, that genuine self-love. It's not self-obsession, you know, we know that. It's not the self-attachment. This is the sense of really flowing out, then the more that the rest opens, okay? And the last thing I say, and then I'm going to say, is that, you know, like Greg brought up, that sometimes some of us just don't, you know, have a harder time with an access point or not. And it's okay to just keep going through the practice and then continue on through the other three. And sometimes we will find our access point more with compassion, right? Or more with sympathetic joy. And then it kind of spreads out in different directions. So no, it's never, when we do these meditation things, it's never a strict formula, and it never has to be one way for everybody. The truth underlying it is always true, but the way it comes together can be very unique and personal to us. Okay?
So if you don't feel warm in your heart, that's okay.
Yeah, if you don't...
Because I get tears and I get Buddha smile, but I'm imagining myself at about 5 years old.
Yeah.
So
you feel something different. You're not feeling like a warm glow. You're feeling tears and a Buddha smile. And yeah. And so that's the thing. Thank you for bringing this up, because I'm guiding, and the zing for me was when I thought I was totally failing at this meditation that I had been doing over and over and over again in a long retreat, being guided by a teacher, and then I finally went in to see him one-on-one, and I explained exactly what I was experiencing, and he was like, wow, you've totally got this. And I was blown away, because I was totally convinced I was failing, because the language I was using to describe what I was experiencing was very different from his language, right? So that's always something to keep in mind. This is signposts, but the work and the truth of it is in your own heart and your own experience. And I empower you 100%. Yes?
Point of clarification, if people wanted to receive particular handouts to this class, you want them to re-sign up on this particular mail list?
Yes.
Okay, just being sure.
Okay, thank you. We're a couple minutes late, so let's
say our prayers.
Sashi
Upi Drishin Neto Tram Rira Vinshin Inde Kempari Sangye Shingdu Mikte Uwagi Jokun Namda Shingma Shubasho Yidam Guru Ravana Mandalakam Niryotayami
Gewa
Di Kewokun Sunam Yeshe Zotokshin Sunam Yeshe Jungle Dampa Kumi Topa Shizu.
I forgot to give you your homework, so now your homework is just going to be to work with finding your access point over this week, okay? Even if it's just 5 minutes a day or a few minutes a day.
Thank you.
So we end with prostrations, which you're welcome to join in or not. Thank you, and have a good Labor Day weekend. Be safe, be happy, be free.